He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
I want to start the show by saying that we lost a great person in the racing world over the weekend, I guess, Dan Gurney, who has left us after being around for many years, from 1931 to 2018. And this is just a little memo on this show for those who haven't heard the news yet who are in the car interest world. But he began his racing career in 1955. I don't know when he ended it, but I guess it was quite successful in his day.
Yes, it was. Great guy. Great driver. Great guy.
And
we are going to talk about 2018 cars, are we, Jay?
We can. Yes, definitely. There's a lot to talk about.
There's a lot to talk about. And I'm going to start out. I know the car of the Honda Accord or Civic just got awarded the North American Car of the Year overnight, I guess, or yesterday.
And which was it, or is it the Civic or the Accord, or are they the same now?
I think it's the Civic.
Okay, I didn't follow that. I forget who awards the North American Car.
I do too.
Year.
There are so many awards out there. We have our own awards here.
We have
show.
Our own awards, and I would like to say that we, over the last few weeks, I personally have done a lot of reading in the various mainstream car magazines, Road and Track, Car and Driver, Motor Trend, and each one of these magazines comes up with either a list of best cars or, in the case of Motor Trend, they come out with a car of the year, a truck of the year, an SUV of the year. And
to that, is there a first among equals of all the awards? Just, you know.
Well, one car seems to have.
I'm just like, not which car is it, but it's like, is there one thing that if you were a car, which of all of these accolades, would you want to be the Motor Trend Car of the Year? Would you want to be the Road and Track Car of the Year? Would you like to be Robin's Car of the Year?
I'd like to be the Populist Car of the Year at the end of the year's sales thing, because that's what they all hope to be.
Right. Understandably, it's a promotion. I'm just wondering, is one more meritorious than...
I don't think so.
I don't think so, and I think that all the manufacturers who win either one of the awards, whether it's Car and Driver's 10 Best, Honda has used that claim to the 10 Best list with the Accord being on that list for most of the last 30 years, and it is used in the latest and newest ads for the 2018 Honda Accord. Likewise, people use Car of the Year or Truck of the Year awarded by Motor Trend because it narrows it down to one vehicle for that particular for any particular year. The sad thing is I tend to forget who was last year's Car of the Year.
I don't remember who last year's Car of the Year was either, but I've now got the second vehicle, the large SUV vehicle. It's the Lincoln Navigator was the same, awarded the Navigator of the Year by the same organization awarded the Honda Civic or Accord as being the Car of the Year, beating out others. And then I thought I printed it out in this paper mound I have here, but I can't find it. So we'll ad lib our way through this show and get on to what I'm looking forward to seeing live, which is the new so-called giant Subaru three-row crossover, which will be available in a two-row version, I'm sure, so you'll have more back area, luggage compartment area than seating area, which is about to show up at dealers' showrooms. And it's going to join the VW Atlas, which is the gigantic VW of their...
The Subaru is called the Ascent, I believe.
Yes.
It was at the New York Auto Show last year, still as a prototype. It's not on the market yet.
But it's about to be.
It's about to be.
Is it attractive?
I think it's very attractive. In my magazine, Motor Trend, there it is. And it looks like all Subarus for you, Jill, to look at as we talk about it.
But I can't.
The interior is very nice. I think it also compares nicely to the Mazda CX-9, as well as the VW Atlas. And I guess it'll go against some of other already available larger SUV versions. But it's designed to keep Subaru family members still buying a Subaru once they outgrow their Outbacks.
And has it been concluded that since we've gone back in time, so to speak, and people realize, the car makers realize that, oh, wow, people are having families, wow, the families are getting older now, wow, there's more gear and more stuff to cart around, oh, wow, we need to go back to the SUV, you know, the bigger car thing.
I don't think that's really it. I think the big car people have been around for years, and they're the ones that buy the Navigators and the General Motors, the Tahoes, and that kind of giant vehicle, as opposed to the largest version of the more compact SUVs. Jay, you may have a different opinion, but go ahead.
Well, I think that new Subaru goes head-to-head with the vehicles like the GMC, what is it called, Arcadia. It goes against the Ford Explorer.
Jeep Cherokee. Grand Cherokee, not the Cherokee.
Not really.
The
Grand Cherokee is still a two-seat vehicle.
That's true.
It isn't all that large. Yeah, it's an interesting vehicle. It broadens the horizons for Subaru. They tried that before with the Tribeca.
Failed miserably.
It failed pretty miserably. It was. I don't know that they put that much effort into it. It's going to be an interesting vehicle. Having said that, I'd like to go over a bunch of vehicles that we've been looking at for the last few weeks now that were really came out in 2017 and are really have hit the market. And as far as cars, I think Robin and I will agree on one thing, is we're shaking our heads when we look at the Motor Trend's Car of the Year, which also is featured as Car and Driver's, one of Car and Driver's 10 best, and that is the new Alfa Romeo.
Giulia.
And
the new one?
Well, it's not new, but it's new. They're still trying to make it new in a way.
Wasn't it last? I thought that I saw ads for it last year. I thought
it did.
It came out in 2017. So it's on
you
the
did
market.
Last
it's,
year.
Okay.
It's crowned as the car of the year in 2018.
Did for it right sell?
Well, to sell cars, you need
buyers.
Well, you need buyers, but you
need
the venues.
Body
you need dealers, and I think that's where the Alfa Romeo falls short, both as this particular model and as a brand, is that there are, I think, and Robin knows this probably better than I do, I think less than 200. I think it's 170
dealers
nationwide. Yeah,
there are less than 200 dealers nationwide, and you can't. I don't think you can have a successful vehicle with less than 200 dealerships nationwide, because for our nearest dealers in East Hartford, not East Hartford, Hartford, I guess, or somewhere there. And, you know, when I brought my Mini, that was the same situation. Mini was a very successful vehicle by comparison, but they had ultimately a lot more dealerships, but the Mini was a different kind of car and had a different kind of appeal than the Alfa Romeo line of cars probably is. They've got basically a couple of sedans, or one main sedan with different models, variants of it, and then they've got the new Stelvia, which is a crossover or SUV version to go head-to-head with all the others, the Porsche Macan, the Jaguar, whatever
F-Pace.
It is. F-Pace. Yes, F-Pace.
Yeah.
And the like. But the problem, as Jay says, is you've got to have a dealership body that is more set beyond the big cities.
Were they trying to get that audience rather than, you know, a more
what kind of audience?
A big city type.
No, there's just there's just not a lot of money.
Okay,
it's Alfa Romeo's been.
It's part of Chrysler.
It's part of it's been part of Fiat for many years, and now part of Fiat Chrysler. So obviously, FCA is going to make its way through the Chrysler dealerships, and amongst the best and of the Chrysler dealerships, they're going to find a number of suitable matches for.
Can they put it out through other Chrysler dealerships?
Yes.
Presumably?
The biggest problem with putting it out through other Chrysler dealerships is a mechanics repair thing, too. You have to supply the replacement parts. You've got to supply mechanics that have been trained to service those vehicles, and then you've got to have space for service bays added to the Chrysler and Jeep service bays. And it's just, you know, it's a real estate thing at that point, meaning if you've got the money to do it, fine. Fiat Chrysler's got a, you know, they've got a lot of grand ideas, like some other people we know in the automobile industry, and they are riding on the coattails right now, I think, in my opinion, of profits in the Jeep brand of vehicles that they are selling, because Jeep is doing very well, and I think it's a good profit center for them. And they there is an article out that I saw this morning that says Marchione is saying that by such and such 2020 or something, the profits at the Jeep division of FCA are going to double. And, you know, by way of saying that it's going to be sort of helping run Fiat Chrysler, where they're losing money in their other brands, and Fiat's losing money, and so is Alfa Romeo, from as far as I can tell, based
on the rest of the Chrysler
sales.
Products.
And I mean, a lot of the rest of the Chrysler products are old, and they're not necessarily exciting either.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right, so we best.
So go on, Jay, to your list. I'd like to hear some more of them.
No, wait. Are we doing? How are we going to do this?
We're just going to talk as we usually do.
All right.
Time is running down.
Exactly. I have my list of top five. I could have come up with a list of top 10, and I just went through the magazines and then thought about a few cars, and also thought about what cars are relevant in our market. And for instance, I'll say it again briefly. For instance, the Alfa Romeo. You can't really buy it around in the tri-state area here. It's not a practical car to buy and own as a daily driver. So, to me, it's not really relevant in our ten.
I would agree with that. 10 best.
Okay, so it didn't really.
So let's move on beyond that.
I looked at a few cars, and I was and Jill and I were talking about this a few minutes ago about the BMW brand, which I think has lost its way. And is no longer the ultimate driving machine. I think it's a great technological machine. It's a great luxury car. I'm not so sure it really is a sports car or sports sedan brand any longer.
I would agree also, but from a different standpoint. I was an Audi fan back in the last century and owned a number of them. I haven't owned a new Audi, since 2003. And I still have that vehicle, and I'm very happy with that vehicle when I drive it, which is not often right now. But I do agree with Jay. BMW is technologically wondrous, wonderful probably at certain levels, but I think it's lost its way too. I'm really big on the Mercedes lineup of cars at the moment, as far as the luxury brands are concerned, over Audi and over BMW. Jaguar is a very distant fourth or beyond, and while I'm not particularly enthused by the design, the current design program at Jaguar, as far as their sedans are concerned, because they just don't have an emotional grab the way the old Jaguar designs were, which look old by today's standards, but actually they still look very good. But Jaguar had to evolve to their current line of cars, and they're there for those who want something that's not going to be seen around every corner, like the BMWs and the Mercedes and, to a certain degree, the Audis.
So I'd like to get back to my top five list. And having said that about BMW, I have two BMWs on my top five. And one is and it's not a brand new car. It's been around for a while. It's the smallest BMW. It's their 2 Series. And I think the, quote-unquote, entry-level 230i, rear-wheel drive only, is one of the few cars in the BMW lineup you can still get with a stick. And for $35,000, $36,000, you can have a very nice two-door coupe with a 6-speed manual transmission with 240 horsepower, and it's a great, great little car, and it's true to the BMW spirit. So that's just a personal choice of
good.
Mine.
I think that's a good choice.
And the other the other one is Robin's next car. It's a perfect car for Robin. He's already looking at me. And that is the BMW 530e xDrive. So BMW is probably the, and I think, the first manufacturer that has come out with a sedan that is both a all-wheel drive vehicle and a hybrid plug-in. And the 530e I think it retails for the mid-50s, and yeah. You can get a well-equipped 530e xDrive, which means all-wheel drive, for under $60,000, which is a lot of money, but a lot of people in this area spend that type of money on cars. And it's an all-wheel drive car. It is a hybrid plug-in. It can go 20 miles on a charge, and it still gets 30 miles to the gallon. It is a great all-around luxury midsize vehicle, in my opinion.
Okay. I'll go with it, but I'm not a fan of BMW as far as an ownership situation. So while I applaud Jay's opinion of it and thrusting it towards me as an idea for me, he has lots of ideas about what I should go out and buy beyond what I'm driving now, which I am in love with. And thank you, Jay, for that encouragement. But it's going to remain in the BMW inventory on the sales lots as far as I'm concerned.
Do they also have, by the way, do they have not plug-in, but do they have a battery hybrid?
I think they automatically, theirs is a plug-in automatically. It's a hybrid plug-in.
Okay.
And actually,
but it's not, it means it can run without being plugged in, too.
And oh, okay.
The plug-in hybrids are basically dual-purpose vehicles. Okay. It's like the plug-in Prius.
Okay.
And that, and you know, to a point, there's an editorial in this week's Automotive News about don't get excited about batteries, guys, because batteries are going to go the way of other things, and the gasoline engines are still going to hang around for a long time to come. But electric-only cars have such limitations of range, as they say properly in their editorial. You can't go cross-country in an electric car, purely electric car, unless you've got a lot of patience and a lot of extra time. Because until you can basically, they imply this, until you can actually refuel a plug-in, a pure electric vehicle in under, in my opinion, 20 minutes, maybe 10, like you can do a gasoline. You just can't go fast.
Can we talk? Let's get back to cars. What
go ahead.
Do you have on your list? I have a few
for cars?
More, but it's your turn.
Okay. You know what I like? It's coming out. It's probably not. We're jumping over into 2019.
I thought we were doing cars of last year. Am I confused?
No, we're not doing cars of last year. We're doing 2018.
Okay.
We're talking about 2018. I mean, I thought we were going to talk about 2018 vehicles
cars the years should be on the road.
That are coming on. That should be on the road.
Okay, so what do you have?
Well, I got the Mustang Bullitt version, which is not on the road, so it's sort of outside of the scope. But it's going to be seen at the Detroit Auto Show, which I believe starts this week. And what I like about the Bullitt is that it's true to an old movie car. For those who
love Steve McQueen and love that
Steve
movie.
McQueen,
yeah.
Exactly.
I'd buy it.
And,
is it green?
It's green, absolutely.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah,
it's green. There it is for you to look at.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful, and it's basically, it's got probably all the things that most people need to have in a day-to-day driver Mustang, so you don't have to go out and buy special, it is a special edition because it'll be limited production probably, but you don't have to go buy the Mustang GT or the Mustang whatever
else.
No,
why would
you?
It's only got a V8 with 475 horsepower.
That's right.
Yeah, everybody should have one, of course.
And it'll come with a manual transmission. And,
of course.
Of course, okay?
Okay, so that's really, okay, so I, who have failed model year 101 for my entire life, am now completely, do you have a favorite car that's on the road, right? Is this?
Actually, I do. The Toyota Camry, either in the Sport V6 sedan, this is a sedan car, not an SUV, with the V6 engine, this year's, the 2018 model, that or the hybrid version of the Camry is what I'm going to pick without knowing a whole lot about them, and I haven't seen them yet, the Camry hybrid. I drive another hybrid, a Sonata hybrid, as listeners know, but I think the Camry hybrid and the Camry sedan is a great overall vehicle. The Camry has been the best-selling sedan for a number of years. It's big inside, somewhat compact outside, But let me tell you, I've driven a three-year-old Camry V6, and as I told the owner of that vehicle when I finished driving it, the state troopers of various states could use that car as a state trooper car. It's so fast. It is actually fun to drive. It has great seats. And for a driver who wants an enthusiast, sort of low-key look on the road, sedan, I think that's my car choice for 2018.
Would you go back to, you know, if you had a fairy car godmother, would you go back to the Camry?
The Sonata is going from what I consider to have been very, very boring over the last 3 years as far as looks. And I really like looks that are distinctive. They are going to have new grill programs for their new 2018 Sonatas. I have yet to see all variants of it. But the Sport, the Sonata Sport and the Sonata Hybrid are going to have grills that turn me on, so to speak, as far as looking at them. So I would compare that very closely to the Camry before I made a choice. But yes, I might go back to the Camry.
As my daughter's best friend used to say when she was a kid, boring. So I will come up with a car that's on my top five list that I think, and I know Robin will agree with, and that is the Audi A5 or S5. Sportback four-door, the four-door coupe.
I agree with him. I saw one the other day, and it is dynamite.
It is a beautiful car. It's classy. It's you will not see a lot of them. So if you want something that stands out in the crowd and not just blends in, and it's an Audi. I mean, you can buy them locally.
Well, the Sportback, as Jay has mentioned, there is one in our corner as we speak that I have seen. I actually thought it was an A7, but I said it was too small, and then I suddenly realized what it was. And I agree with Jay, I really like that vehicle. I'm somewhat, personally, as we're getting towards the closing of this show, off buying European cars the rest of my life. I guess I'm getting too old. Jay would probably say I'm getting too old and boring, but I am out of the BMW, Mercedes, Audi purchase frame of mind, but I do agree with him that the A5 Sportback and two-door or four-door is going to be a great car for Audi.
And you're likely to see some here on the road.
And they'll be here, yes.
And I have two more cars that I think are meaningful, and one I think I've talked about is the new Volvo. It's either the V90 wagon or the Cross Country. And as a cross country, it classifies as an SUV, and Motor Trend had it in one of the.
And that was the third vehicle of the year of this group of North American choice of whoever makes the North American choice. That now that Jay brings that up, it was the Volvo V90, I believe.
Yeah.
Was the third go behind the Lincoln Navigator and the Honda. We haven't figured it out.
The wagon or the cross country is just a beautiful vehicle. It looks very long. It's relatively low, but, and we can get back on this another time, sitting high doesn't make you safe. It's got plenty of room. It's beautifully finished on the inside. And
it's distinctive also. And as I have said before, Jay sort of joined us on the show many times, I'm really a big fan of the Volvo design because it's different than most of the other models out there, and I like distinctiveness these days and homogeneous looks that many cars have between the brands, and I think Volvo is putting out a wonderful car.
And last but not least on my top five is, drum roll, and this is not going to be a surprise.
Come on, stop, girl.
The Chevy. I want to make sure you don't have a
Chevy Bolt.
The yes. Chevy Bolt.
Yes.
I think it is a great car. It's compact. It's discreet. It is full electric. It gets 250-mile range. It is a totally acceptable daily car. Yes, if you want to go cross-country, you need another car. But most people don't drive cross-country. And as a commuting car, it's just absolutely great. It's also going to be GM's first car without a steering wheel. So in the automation phase,
oh boy, he touched
cars. This is going to be a meaningful vehicle,
and this is going to be a meaningful discussion because cars without steering wheels, are not going to go very far beyond very, very limited venues of operation in cities and in maybe retirement communities, because I, for one, and I think there are a lot of people, Jay claims he could sit in a car without a steering wheel, but I don't agree.
In a Volvo.
And I will, yes. In a Volvo. I don't know what a car, with a Volvo without a wheel is different than a Ford without a wheel.
Well, different people have different living rooms.
We're closing up fast, so good luck, Jay. If you want to have a Volvo without a steering wheel, go for it.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarc, and this is Carson.